Welcome back to this week's episode of Politically Charged. I'm, of course, your host, Jack Berlin, and this week we start with a fitting metaphor for the Trump administration. But first, make sure to go subscribe to the Politically Charged Daily Briefing podcast wherever you're hearing this to get your short, easy-to-comprehend briefing of the previous day's events every weekday morning. Now, on Saturday, a fire broke out on the 50th floor of Trump Tower in New York City. Unfortunately, it resulted in the death of one resident while six firefighters were treated for non-life-threatening injuries. President Trump took to Twitter shortly after the fire broke out to thank the first responders, as did Eric. And as we all know, this president is one of impeccable morality, so of course he couldn't simply thank first responders in his tweet. He had to praise the quality of his own building while one of his tenants was fighting for his life. One thing to note on this tragic situation, the residential area of Trump Tower reportedly did not have fire sprinklers installed, which seems like kind of a big thing to overlook. Of course, I absolutely do not mean to make light of this situation that, of course, it resulted in the man's death, and obviously condolences to the man's family. Now, moving on to more news that happened over the weekend. Around 50 people died Saturday in Douma, one of the last rebel-held cities in Syria. The United States and our allies around the world almost immediately placed blame on the Syrian regime. This attack comes almost a year to the day after a similarly horrific chemical attack carried out by the Syrian regime, one that resulted in the president's authorization of a missile strike on the airport where the attack was launched. Calling the latest attack sick, President Trump once again took to Twitter criticizing Russia and Iran for supporting Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. Russia responded by suggesting the rebels staged the chemical attack to force international aid. Not exactly the best argument. The UN will hold emergency meetings today, on Monday, one called by the US, the other by Russia, after they released a statement saying if the use of chemical agents in the attack was confirmed, it would demand an immediate response by the international community. Reports indicate the attack was carried out by Syrian military helicopters that dropped the chemicals, causing reactions consistent with chlorine exposure. As I said earlier, this is unfortunately not the first time that the Assad regime has been accused of using chemical weapons on its own people. Last April, there was a sarin gas attack which resulted in the death of almost 80 people in another rebel-held town. During that attack, in response, 59 Tomahawk missiles were launched at the Syrian airbase by the United States, where the vehicles involved in the attack originated. For all intents and purposes, it was essentially a symbolic response. The missiles did very little in terms of lasting damage, and I'm pretty sure if I remember it right, planes were able to take off from that airbase in the 2-3 days following the strike. The attack that occurred over the course of this weekend comes on the heels of President Trump suggesting that U.S. forces would leave Syria very soon. As is often the case, President Trump appeared to speak out of turn, with the White House essentially forced to walk back this claim, particularly after President Trump held a meeting with a range of security officials that all advised the president that an abrupt departure could result in any number of unintended consequences. Senator John McCain alluded to this report in a statement saying, President Trump last week signaled to the world that the United States would prematurely withdraw from Syria. Bashar al-Assad and his Russian and Iranian backers have heard him and are emboldened by American inaction. Now, apparently, and I have no idea how this is true, but for the first time since President Trump took office almost a year and a half ago, President Trump called out Vladimir Putin for Russia's alliance with the Syrian government, which is somewhat mind-boggling that of all the crazy things the president's tweeted during his time in office, he somehow managed to not mention Putin at all until now. And it's not like Putin really hasn't given him the ammo to do so, he just hasn't. So I guess we'll just chalk it up to yet another meaningless coincidence involving Russia. A few minutes later, in another tweet, he partially blamed the attack on President Obama's infamous decision to declare a chemical attack a red line for the United States. For those that don't know, in 2013, President Obama decided against military action in response to a chemical attack carried out by the Syrian government. Instead, he opted to work with the Russians to destroy the chemical weapons in Syria. Obviously, that did not exactly work. But the reason the tweets are an important part of the story is that President Trump himself, in his pre-presidential days, advised President Obama to not attack Syria. Now, contradicting himself is far from the worst thing President Trump has done during his time in office, but it's an interesting tell on the power of a president's low approval ratings. And although Russia has issued a warning to the United States about striking Syria, I would be absolutely amazed if a strike isn't launched similar to the one that we saw last year. The problem with further action on the part of the U.S. military is that due to Russian and Iran's involvement with the Syrian government, Really, it's just one mistake could turn a proxy war into another full-blown war on foreign soil that we have to deal with. Even something like a no-fly zone, a term that's often thrown around in situations like these, could cause major problems for the U.S. military. For example, if the U.S. were to institute a no-fly zone over a section of Syria, and a Russian plane violated that zone, we're faced with a horrible decision. Either we have to shoot down a Russian plane in taking a giant leap towards a much bigger conflict, or we allow them to violate the no-fly zone, which makes it entirely toothless. Thankfully, as of yet, I have not been asked to be a part of this decision-making process for some godforsaken reason. And really, I don't know that there's a good solution to this problem. The U.S. really can't stand idly by as people are brutally killed by their own government. But because of foreign involvement from countries like Russia and Iran, the actions we can take that won't start a larger conflict are extremely limited. Hopefully the president and his staff can find some kind of adequate solution, but at a certain point, it gets to the point where trying to play nice with countries that are allowing innocent people to die by chemical attacks really just isn't worth it. And on that cheery note, we move on to the simmering trade war with China that the Trump administration has for some reason decided to start. Really, before we get into the nitty-gritty of the billions of dollars worth of tariffs being thrown around, it's extremely important to note that none of these tariffs have taken effect as of yet. In fact, if they ever do take effect, it most likely won't be until late May when the process is completed. There are some hoops that the government actually has to jump through to make this happen. That being said, everybody seemed to lose their collective minds last week. Days after an immediate tit-for-tat round of tariffs between the world's two largest economies, President Trump announced he was directing the U.S. Trade Representative to look into the possibility of placing another $100 billion worth of tariffs on Chinese goods. Now, China has said in the past that any trade action taken by the United States would be met with equal measure. Up to this point, for right now, China has opted for a mix of tariffs that are hard-hitting combined with politically damaging ones for the Trump administration. One of, if not the biggest item China has threatened to place tariffs on is soybeans, of all things, which, believe it or not, could deal a huge blow to the U.S. economy. For starters, China is really head and shoulders above everyone else in terms of importing soybeans from the United States. They import almost a third of the soybeans that we export. Some of the biggest players in the soybean industry are right in the heart of Trump country. And really, that kind of forces the president's hand into making an economic and a political decision at once. And really, if we're being honest, nothing he's done so far has suggested he can make two decisions at once. But part of the reason that he's been able to get away with that is that there's very few things that seem to be able to stick to President Trump. But I'd guess that economic instability in the heart of his base would probably be one of them. In addition to soybeans, China has also focused on items from swing states like orange juice from Florida and corn crops from Iowa. All of this explanation is a way of saying that this is the type of decision where you see somebody's true colors come out. The politically expedient thing to do for the president would be to back off or negotiate tariffs that are placed on maybe some less politically sensitive goods, things that don't really make his base mad. However, backing off would have President Trump giving up on fixing two issues with the China-U.S. trade balance. The first being the trade deficit, which is in the hundreds of billions of dollars, and another big one, intellectual property theft. I absolutely am not advocating for the start of a trade war, especially with this president and his less than qualified cast of advisors, but the reasoning behind the tariffs is sound. The theft of American companies' intellectual property is really something that can't be taken lightly. Of course, Trump supporters, as always, claim the president is playing 3D chess while everyone else is playing checkers, but really, I'm not so sure. I will give the Trump administration and President Trump this. Our trade balance with China is a huge deal, but placing hundreds of billions of dollars worth of tariffs on the world's second largest economy in an effort to make all of the deficit back at once really doesn't seem like the greatest idea. But truthfully, everything will be absolutely fine as long as the favorite Trump son, Jared Kushner, is in charge of this. And you know what? Might as well bring the mooch back too. He would thrive in this situation. Moving on, last week, EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt repeatedly found himself in ethically hot water. Imagine that. To sum it all up, Pruitt has accepted cheap housing from the wife of an energy lobbyist for whom the EPA did favors. He billed taxpayers for supposedly necessary, extravagant air travel. He hired an associate of his to whom he owes a lot of money, and he hired him at top dollar. He used $70,000 to replace two desks in his office. He made a request for a 20-person security apparatus in addition to a bulletproof SUV, And finally, and really my personal favorite, he demanded the use of lights and sirens so he would make a dinner reservation. Only the best for the Trump administration. Not only does Pruitt seem to be doing everything he possibly can to lose his job and skirt the law, he also went on Fox News to answer what amounted to fairly simple, no, not even fairly, they were simple questions. And as you can probably guess with his track record, he did not do well. The fact of his less than stellar performance paired with the most TV-obsessed president the US has ever had doesn't suggest long-term job security for Pruitt. For his part, and true to his colors, President Trump has praised Pruitt up to this point and defended him, which, if past Trump firings are any indication, probably means that Pruitt should be out of a job shortly. This would be a huge deal to the Trump administration as a whole, as the position of EPA administrator is Senate confirmed, so whoever gets chosen by President Trump would have to run the gauntlet of a virtually split Senate. So we can expect Pruitt to hang on by a thread for just a little while longer, or until the president gets bored and just wants to fire someone. And finally, we end with news coming out of North Korea on Sunday, of all places. For the first time, North Korea has reportedly told the United States that they are willing to discuss denuclearization, almost nailed it, when President Trump and Kim Jong-un meet. The breakthrough occurred during the course of secret negotiations leading up to the summit of the two world leaders. It appears to be promising news. It's better than nothing. But the downside is that the newly elevated position of two North Korean hawks in Trump's administration doesn't really bode well for the agreement. We have John Bolton, who still advocates for the Iraq war we're still involved in, and he's due to start his new position as National Security Advisor today, replacing H.R. McMaster. On the other hand, we have Mike Pompeo, who is a former House Tea Party member, who I love, and CIA director. And he's expected to begin his confirmation hearing for Secretary of State in the coming days. Their respective jobs would have them playing extremely important, crucial roles in any type of negotiations with North Korea. And their hawkish views could influence our famously strong-minded president in the wrong direction. So that wraps up this week's episode of Politically Charged. Don't forget to check out the Politically Charged Daily Briefing. Politically Charged Daily Briefing. Politically Charged Daily Briefing. Of course, check out our website at politicallycharged.us. Follow me on Twitter at Jack Berlin. Go ahead and leave a 5-star rating here and at Politically Charged Daily Briefing. And with that, we out.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.